So this is, I made a promise to try to come to Phoenix, to try to do something in Phoenix almost every month of the year. Most of the year we're traveling to other countries. We've just been in China and Mexico. And then we just finished a 10-day retreat in Mexico. It was very beautiful. And we had people from all over the world came. We moved one of the Phoenix 10-day teachings to Mexico because so many of our friends couldn't get visas to get into the United States because of Homeland Security. So we thought we would try it in Mexico once and see how it worked. And a lot of Chinese people came, and people from Germany and Bulgaria, big Bulgarian contingent, people like that, you know, who can't get visas because they don't have a lot of money. And it was really fun. And then this week, Monday, we leave from New York, and there'll be 3 days of teachings there on the Wheel of Life, which is an old Buddhist teaching. And that'll be Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. And then Thursday, there'll be a party in New York. Those teachings are free if you can get there. It's at the Prince George Ballroom, which is slightly bigger than this. And on 27th Street, you're welcome to come in the evening, 7 to 9 or 10, something. And then the last night, Thursday night, after the teaching, we'll have a celebration of three different things that are happening. One is it's the 25th anniversary of our refugee work. So we've been helping Tibetan refugees for 25 years this year. And we 25 years ago, we took some computers to India, to the refugee camp. And we taught them to use computers. And then they type in their ancient sacred books. So there are 200,000 Tibetan scriptures. And most of the libraries in Tibet were burned during the Cultural Revolution. So we find the books in other countries, like St. Petersburg, Russia, has about 140,000 Tibetan scriptures there. And we scan them, and then we send them to the refugee camp, and they type them in. And then we put them up online for free. So we just finished this year, I'm going to cry, but after 25 years, we finished all of the books which survived from ancient India, all the Buddhist books from ancient India. So it's 4,600 texts exactly, and 350,000 pages. And we just finished. That will take another 150 years. We projected out to be another 150 years. We're on our second and third generation of refugees now. The children of the original refugees are doing the typing now. So we have about 150 years to go. But just the books we have already located to be typed in. So, and then we'll be celebrating the 20th anniversary of ACI. ACI means, I took a 25-year course in the monastery called the Geshe, and then I translated those, the important courses that I went through into English. It's about 10,000 pages of translation, and we've been teaching it to people for 20 years, and there are now over 300 teachers in the world teaching those classes around the world in many countries. So we're going to celebrate the 20th anniversary of that. And there's a new book coming out, and I'll tell you about that later. So we're going to have a party, but you're very welcome to come. It's free. All the teachings are free. If you can just get to New York and find a couch. The couch is the hard part, right? And February is too cold to sleep in the park. So anyway, you're very welcome to come. So this kind of got squeezed in between everything. So we didn't have time to rent a big place and all that, so I'm sorry for that. So tonight is the sixth installment of a text by the first Panchen Lama. So there are two great reincarnated lamas of Tibet. One is called the Dalai Lama, and one is called the Panchen Lama. And so usually the first one is really cool, and then they recognize reincarnations, and it's kind of like a crapshoot, you know? You take a kid who's 2 years old and hope, you know? So sometimes they turn out and sometimes they don't. The current Dalai Lama, I think, is the greatest of the 14. And they turned out pretty well. And but you have to choose them at 2 years old or something. And so the Panchen Lama, he was in the 1500s. And the first Panchen Lama was a very extraordinary teacher, very, very wonderful teacher. He was a great pacifist. He stopped the war in Tibet single-handedly. He walked out between the armies and said, "You have to kill me first." And they stopped. And he was, like, very famous at the time. And so he was a fantastic poet and a great philosopher. And he wrote a very beautiful poem. It's a long poem. And it was about the arguments that went on in his own head when he was trying to be a good person. You know? Like, you don't really need that third cookie tonight. You're like, "No, I really do," you know? And we all have these discussions in our mind. So he wrote it down. He wrote it down. And it's called Dangzin Shandam. Dangzin Shandam means, in this particular case, the wish to follow the golden rule was fighting with his selfishness, you see? So part of his mind wanted to be a nice person and help other people. And part of his mind understood that this is what makes you successful, is to make other people successful first, you know? So he had that part of his mind that understood that. But then there was another part of his mind that said, you know, let's look out for number one. You know, you should really take care of yourself first, and then if you have extra, you can take care of others. But this idea that taking care of others would create your own success, that's kind of wild, you know?
Sure.
Let's play it safe and take care of ourselves first. And then if you have time, you can help other people. You know what I mean? Like, he had this argument going on in his own mind. And it's called Dangzin Shandam. So it's we call it the debate between the angel and the devil, but really it's an argument between understanding where things come from and not understanding where things come from. So even if you want to be selfish, the best thing to do is to help other people. So we're on the sixth installment of this poem. I felt my Lama taught me part of this poem. It's very famous in Tibet, and it's never been translated. No one's ever taught it. I think it's a spiritual classic. I think it will be counted among the greatest books of the religions of this world once people learn it. And it spreads a little bit. So it's discussing, it starts out as a discussion on a thing called Mahamudra. So if some of you are doing yoga, you might know Mahamudra. Mahamudra, there's a corresponding, I can't do it because I have road signs, but you grab your big toe and you pull it up to your ear. And then the other toe, you do this. So one is up here. The right toe is up here. And you hold the left toe. And then that's supposed to have some extraordinary effect on your mind and your body. And that's called, in yoga, that's called a Mahamudrasana. In philosophy, Mahamudra has a different meaning. Mahamudra, we call it Shi Lam Devusum. Shi means the state of Mahamudra for a normal person in a normal life. And then Lam means if they get some training and they try to develop themselves spiritually. And then Debu means, in the end, what will you become? So there's three Mahamudras in this poem. Shi, Lam, Debu. Shi means how normal people are. Lam means when you're struggling to follow a spiritual path. And then Debu means how will you end up if you succeed, what will happen? So you will have Mahamudra in your normal life. Everyone has, bugs have Mahamudra in their normal life. Then there's a different Mahamudra that's going on when you're studying to improve your spirit. And then there's the highest Mahamudra that happens when you get enlightened. So this poem is discussing three levels of Mahamudra: your normal person's life, a person who's struggling to follow a spiritual path, and then a person who has succeeded and completed that process. So we'll be discussing three levels of Mahamudra. What is Mahamudra for a person in normal life? There are two levels, okay? Roughly, you can say Mahamudra is the awareness of your own mind, the ability to listen to your own mind, right? So we have conversations in our mind all day. I used to teach in New York many years ago, and I required at the time, I didn't have very big classes, and I required that each student have an interview before entering the course. And this one guy, I took him out to lunch, and I said, well, you know, gee, what do you do? You know, and he says, I'm a heroin addict. You know, and I'm like, oh, really? You know, and he says, I steal things for a living. And I'm like, then I'm like thinking, what do we have in this center? You know? And then I said, well, why do you do that? You know, why? I never met a heroin addict before. And he said, I'll tell you why. Ever since I was a kid, my mind is talking all day long. My mind just talks all day long. It chatters. My mind chatters in my head all day long, and it drives me nuts. And I finally figured out if I shoot some heroin, it'll stop for a couple of hours. And for me, that's worth it. Wow. You know? And I was like, yeah, I have that problem too, you know? And my mind chatters too. It's very disturbing sometimes. You know, your mind is talking all the time inside your head. And I think the people who become addicted or even to alcohol are more sensitive people. They are almost more advanced people. And they can't stand it. They have to stop it somehow because it's too loud in their mind. For us, we're just normal people. It's not so loud. But basic Mahamudra, meaning the basic capacity to listen to your mind, everybody has. Animals have it. They have some thoughts going on in their mind, and they have some awareness of those thoughts. But they don't distance themselves from those thoughts. They don't watch the thoughts. They just have them. Okay? So there's a difference between hearing your mind talk and then observing what your mind is saying as if you were somebody else. You see what I mean? Like, how's the weather this morning? You know, like you get up and you say, how's the weather this morning? And your mind is like, I don't like this person. This person is fighting me. You know, I can't believe what they said to me. You know, and you're listening to him. It's like, stop whining. You know, stop whining. And if you're having the thought, you're just complaining. You know,
I don't like this. This person said this to me yesterday.
If you have path Mahamudra, if you've got some training, some little bit of training, you learn to step back from the mind and watch it. And say, you know, this is stupid. This is sick, you know. There's so many good things happening today, and I'm spending the whole morning thinking about this person who said something bad about me yesterday. You know what I mean? Like, it's an awareness of what you're thinking, the ability to step back and say, like, hey, those are dumb thoughts, you know. That's a waste of my life. That's a waste of my time. I shouldn't think like that. I should think about something nicer or more creative, or, you know, some kind of project that I want to do. I shouldn't sit here and listen to my mind whine all morning about something that happened yesterday that I can't change, you know? So that's path Mahamudra, basic distance from your mind, able to watch your mind, and make gentle suggestions for it, you know? Like maybe you could think about the other 100 fantastic things that are happening in your life, not worry about this one thing, you know? Talk to your mind. It's the ability to talk to your mind. That's a certain level, an awareness of your thoughts. Everybody has it on a low level. As if you meditate, you develop an ability to distance yourself from your thoughts and observe them and try to correct them. You know, you shouldn't think like that today. You know, that's mean. You shouldn't wish that she fell off the sidewalk and miss that dress. You know what I mean? That you're jealous of. You know, like that's not noble. You know, like it's the ability to catch your mind thinking unkind things or stupid things or whining all day. Okay? That's a basic Mahamudra, but there's a higher level of Mahamudra. Okay? A higher level Mahamudra, which yoga is supposed to stimulate in your mind. Mahamudra pose is meant to stimulate higher sorts of understanding of life. You see, that's why we do that pose. That's why we do Maha Mudra Yoga, the asana. So what is that? That's like you're like your partner is, I don't know, criticizing you. Your partner says something bad to you, you know? Which I know doesn't happen for any of you, but but you know, they say like, they just say some thoughtless thing and they hurt your feelings, you know, which happens. It's not that they're mean and not that they're cruel, but they were in a bad mood, they got yelled at work, and then they came home and they said, you know, this dinner really sucks or something like that. You know what I mean? Like, and then it stabs you in the heart, you feel really bad, and they just don't think about it, you know. So higher Mahamudra would be to study your reactions at the moment, you know. Like, what's the mind saying?
Oh, he said my dinner is back. He said my dinner is back.
When you're watching your mind and say, just calm down, you know, maybe he had a bad day. You know, where did it come from anyway? Okay. Like, Mahamudra asks the mind itself, why did your husband criticize you today? That's higher Mahamudra. Higher Mahamudra asks the mind itself, why did your husband criticize you today? It asks why. And then the answer is, in our belief, in Buddhist belief, is that I must have criticized somebody else last week and hurt them in the same way, maybe unintentionally, by being just flippant and saying some kind of cruel thing to them. So, you know, if you get good at meditating, you can track it back. The thought, train, chain back to last week. If you get really good at meditation, you can follow back all the thoughts you've had for a week, and you can find the thought to say something critical to someone else that caused your husband to say it today. You see, it gets really cool. Then you say to your mind, like, who created your husband? Why did your husband criticize you today? Because I criticized someone last week. Then that's highest Mahamudra. That's real Mahamudra. Okay. Why? What's the purpose of Mahamudra? The purpose of Mahamudra is to have a happy life. You know, to have an enjoyable, peaceful life. So if your own mind is talking to your own mind and saying the reason the husband said the dinner sucks is that you criticized that lady at work last week. So, duh, stop criticizing people and your husband will change because he's coming from you. And then if you keep that kind of Mahamudra up long enough, everyone in your world will be happy and peaceful because they're coming from you. Okay? So that's higher, that's a higher form of Mahamudra. So, the Buddha taught that high Mahamudra. It became a very high secret practice throughout India, especially around 700 AD to 1000 AD, as did yoga. Yoga flowered in India, in northeast India, Bengal, in around the 800 to 1000. It got hot, it got big, and everybody was doing it. Hindus and the Buddhists were doing it together, and it got really popular. And Mahamudra pose and Mahamudra system of watching your own mind got very big and very popular. It was really hot at the time. And then a few yogis brought it to Tibet. A few Tibetans came down to India. Some Indians came to Tibet and they learned it. Then suddenly India was attacked by the Mughals and taken over by the Mughals for, I don't know, about 700 years from Iran. And all of North India became Muslim. Delhi, the whole North India. All yoga was stamped out. All temples were burned down. All Buddhist books were burned. That's why we were saving them. There are no other copies of what we just finished. There's no Sanskrit copies of that. They were all burned. You know? Then the British came for 300 years. And they stamped out yoga in a cultural way. They said it was stupid and superstitious, and these ideas were, what do you call it?
Okay.
Not sophisticated. And, you know, you have to accept, you know, our system. And they basically, so it was 1,000 years of darkness. During that time, in Tibet, people were teaching Mahamudra and passing on Mahamudra. So it kept alive in Tibet from India. So that's what we're going to study tonight. We're going to go into Mahamudra. It got popular, and then people started to misunderstand it. And there came to be many versions of Mahamudra meditation, many of which were no longer correct, to the point where they didn't stop your husband being critical. Got it? So correct doesn't mean that you fit into some church's box. You see, correct means, does that meditation work to make your husband stop criticizing you? Then it's Mahamudra. And if it's something else and he keeps criticizing you, then it's not Mahamudra. Got it? It's not good meditation. So what he's been doing in this book, I'm going to sneeze anytime now. Okay. Thanks. Oh, that's
situation.
Yeah, that's optimistic. Okay. So the first Panchen Lama, who lived 500 years ago, is discussing mistaken ideas about meditation. And they're not mistaken because you don't wear the right suit or something like that. They're mistaken because they don't make your husband stop criticizing. Okay, got it? So here we go. Lama, I'm going to start on the... why don't you give me the one that you have? It might be better. To your left. Oh, I'm sorry. Okay. What page are we on? 18. Okay. Lama Sakai Pada Chaktano. I'm in the middle of page 18. I bow down to my... I covered the first paragraph, which you might notice. Okay. I bow down to my Lama, angel of angels. It just means that in a Buddhist context, the first thing you always do is seek a teacher. Okay? You cannot learn to meditate without a teacher. Vicky teaches piano. I know she teaches piano. Okay, and you know, nowadays on the internet, that people think you can learn piano on the internet. You can. If you're really persistent and you watch YouTube over and over, you can learn piano, but it won't sound good. You know, it won't be, there's something missing, which is the human touch. Your teacher's hand on your hand, correcting your movements and giving you little tricks that you can't figure out by yourself. And that's what teachers are for. And to drive you, to push you to your best. You need, like Olympics, imagine an Olympic athlete without a coach. Okay, spiritual stuff is the same. Okay? You gotta, in your lifetime, the first task of a spiritual teacher, seeker, is to find their own personal teacher. I'm not saying me. There are many, many, many in the world, right? But your first job is to find someone who can teach you, like meditation, you know? So you go to them and they'll say, my Lama, he would say, okay, describe what you meditate. I lived with him for 25 years. I did his laundry. I cooked for him. I drove. I made all the money for the house. And he taught me, you know? And, you know, he'd say, okay, describe how you meditated today. And I'd say, okay, I was meditating on emptiness. He said, what's emptiness? I said, you close your eyes. You think everything is black. He said, stop there. Kupa, Kupa. I said, Lama, what does Kupa mean? Idiot. then you need that. You need someone to say, that's not going to help you. You know. Then you need someone to adjust your meditation the way that someone would adjust your piano playing. You need someone like that. So the reason the first Panchen Lama, at the beginning of his book, first he says, I honor my teacher, because I wouldn't be here without my teacher. Same with me, same with anybody, okay? All right, then he goes to part six, okay? Just be aware that you have missed 2 or 3 years of this book already, and you're jumping into the middle, impossibly. Okay. Lala Name Gongse Kyan. Name para mepa ni ye wa chi kya ma che par mepa kona gomba gomba mang There are others who say, okay, so these, we're in the middle of a conversation, and we just got to a new kind of bad meditation. Okay? We got to another bad meditation that you should avoid. Okay? By the way, bad meditation in Tibet was sophisticated. They weren't stupid. You know? We cataloged in St. Petersburg, it took 14 years. We cataloged 141,000 scriptures written by Tibetans. They were not stupid. You know? Extremely sophisticated. You know what? The interest that we have in gadgets, they had in the mind. You know? Like, they weren't excited about iPhone 5. They were excited about Mahamudra 5. You know, did you hear? Something came out with Mahamudra, you know? And they were like, wow, you know, let's try it out. Hopefully, we're better than the iPhone 5. So, there are others who say they meditate on the fact that I don't exist, but they fail to make this most simple distinction between my not being here, there, and non-existence itself. And so many meditate upon nothing more than nothing there. Okay? So people say meditate on emptiness, right? And then people say, okay, I'll meditate on emptiness. I'll try not to think about anything. Or I'll pretend that things don't exist. I'll pretend the husband who criticized my cooking last night doesn't exist. Okay? No, it's all illusion. You know, like that. You know, no, and you see if that works. Try it. Try it for a week. The food will get worse and worse. So it's like, who's the I here? Who's talking? Who's me? You see, somebody's talking, and this is the conversation.
The devil.
Between, yeah, two parts of a guy's own mind. We call it the devil. I mean, in Tibetan, they call it, it's difficult. You ready? It means to think that a pen is a pen. The habit of thinking that a thing is itself. And that's very sophisticated. We'll talk more about it, okay? The devil is not like got red hair, you know, red body and Arizona State Sun Devil. Okay, he's very sophisticated, very intelligent, and he's saying, "Come on, a pen is a pen. Let's quit talking in riddles. How's that going to help your husband to think that a pen isn't a pen? How does it, by the way?" When we say a pen is not a pen, and we say your husband is not your husband when he's criticizing you, what we mean is he's not coming from his own side. He's coming from you, okay? There's a husband who appeared to come in the door and say something unreasonable to you, right? From work, he didn't come from the kitchen, right? He came from work in the front door and criticized you. And it looks like he's self-automating. He's walking, he's talking, he runs his body. He decides what he's going to say to you. It's not you telling him. You didn't have a sign on the front door that said, "Criticize my dinner when you walk in." You know, it's not your fault. It's his fault. He decided to criticize you, right? The husband who walked in the front door and started to criticize you, who was coming from work, doesn't exist, couldn't exist, never existed, never will exist. There is no such husband. Okay? The husband who's not your fault does not exist. And that's a very simple thing. There's no two-headed purple elephant 48 feet high rampaging through this room right now. Trust me. Okay? There's no, just no such thing. Could it have? No, a purple one? a normal elephant, maybe. But I'm talking one that never could exist anyway. You got to appreciate that. When people criticize you and you feel bad at them, you are feeling bad about someone who was never there and could not be there. You are chasing phantoms. And you are angry at phantoms. Every time you ever got angry in your life, you were angry at someone who wasn't there. Is there a husband there? Duh, of course. Did he come in the door? Yes. Duh. Did he criticize dinner? Yes. Right. Is he coming from himself? No. Does he have power what to say about dinner? No. Who decides what he says about dinner? You did. When? Last week. When you criticized somebody else at work. You created your husband to criticize dinner. The husband which you created last week by criticizing someone at work did come in the house and criticize you. That husband exists. Okay? Can you get angry at him?
Sure.
If you know it's your fault. You see what I mean? You can't. You can't really get as angry. You know? You know? If you went too far, I always have this story. There's a story. Like if you walk in the bathroom and you step in cold water on a cold day, and because someone left the shower open, and you get angry, and then you ask everybody in your family, you know, who left the shower door open? And they all say, not me. And then they say, Mom, you were up early, you took a shower, maybe. Then you realize you forgot to close the shower door yourself. Then you don't go stand in front of the mirror and say, you stupid. If you realize your husband is coming from you, you can't get angry. You won't get angry. You will cut yourself some slack that you won't cut other people. Forgive those who trespass against this as we forgive. Okay. So, but someone heard that explanation and someone went home to their monastery and they said, Geshe Michael said, Mahamudra means your husband doesn't exist. See, they forgot. They didn't get it straight. Okay? And then that kind of Mahamudra started to spread in Tibet. And people said, oh, stuff doesn't exist. Don't worry. Don't stress. You know? Someone yells at you, they just don't exist. So why worry? You know? Someone breaks your teeth with their hand. It doesn't exist. Why feel bad? You know? You know, it's like, it's not practical. It doesn't work. You see? If it doesn't work, it's not correct. Well, does the other one work? To believe that he's coming because you criticized somebody last week, does that work to stop him? Does it work tonight when Mahamudra arises in your mind and you think, he's coming from me? I yelled at someone last week. Will he suddenly stop criticizing dinner? No. Okay? That's like cement that's already hard. Okay? It's too late. You might as well just smile. You know, okay. Well, maybe, honey, you can cook tomorrow. You know, like that, or something like that, you know. But you're not going to change it. It's too late. Okay, you've already planted the seed in your mind, and it opened. My Lama used to say, you can't push a tree back in the ground. It's too late, you know. So do the best you can. It's unpleasant. He's going to be unpleasant. But don't make new seeds to see him unpleasant next week. Like, shut the cycle off. Shut the causes off. It's like shutting off a valve and then there's some more water comes out, but it stops after a while. That's the idea of Buddhism. You shut it off now, and next week he comes in and he says that it's a wonderful day. Okay?
You don't have to cook.
He learns. That takes more seeds. Okay. So anyway, some people misunderstood and they thought that the point of Mahamudra meditation was to identify the devil in your mind and think he's not there and wish he wasn't there. And that doesn't work. You can wish your husband wasn't mean tonight, but he's going to be until you plant different seeds. Okay. So thinking, trying to imagine that he's not there, it's not going to work. Okay, and that's what they're criticizing. Don't look at your mind's own misunderstanding and fantasize that it's not there, because that's not going to change. Okay? He's not talking about a husband. He's talking about the devil in your mind. Okay? And that you're not going to get rid of him by imagining, pretending that he's not there. That's not Mahamudra. Okay? All right, here we go. What time are we supposed to go to?
9:30.
So I'll stop in 15 minutes and we'll have a break. There's a bathroom here, and there's a bathroom in the casita out back, okay? And there's all this wilderness between. Just kidding. Okay. Daina ngai chinayin. Kini chabna midana dedu kigi kandu chin yu tsam shik kyang ma le par nani bupa kima ne dena ngai chine yin means those ideas in your head about your husband, the wrong ones, they are my chinle. The devil's still talking. Chinle is a one of my high lamas was named Tenzin Chinle. You know him from the Vajrayogini Sadhana, Tenzin Chinle Sha.
Mm-hmm.
He was my first teacher, was the reincarnation of Tenzin Chinle. He's still alive, he's in Wisconsin. But Chinle means holy deeds, the holy high deeds. Like you don't go up to the Dalai Lama and say, what you been up to, man? You say, in Tibet, you have to say, oh, my holiness, you know, what have your sacred deeds been this week? The word for sacred deeds is chinle. It's only used for high lamas and buddhas. Who's using it for themselves here? The devil. That's my chinle. What's his chinle?
Wrong meditation.
Wishing your husband wasn't there and thinking that's going to stop the problem. He's like, that's my teaching manifesting in a human being. I'm such a great lama. He's bragging. He got people to misunderstand meditation. They are wasting their life on a stupid meditation that has no effect. It's great. Okay. Am I holy enlightened deeds? And I'm nothing remotely close to you. In the Tibetan, if you're learning Tibetan, chok means direction. There are four chokes like north, south, west, east. The chok here is in a battle. There are two chokes. There are two sides, right? So what the devil says, the angel says, he says to the angel, they aren't even in the right ballpark. You know, they're not even on the right side of the city. I sent Nick a really important letter. I had to send him a big check to cover some expenses. And we were all excited because I finally had some money. And he needed some money. And I said, I'll take care of Nick. I got it, man. And I live like 2 hours away from here. So I dropped it in the mail, right? And then I'm like, he's going to be so happy with me. You know? He's going to love me. You know what I mean? Like a week later, he sends me this email like, Kekla, the check didn't come, you know. I'm like, what? And then they search all over, you know. And I addressed it to 57th Street, which is the other choke. That's the other side of Phoenix. So choke means totally the other side of town. So what he's saying is, someone who's doing that meditation isn't even on your side of town, man. Whose side of town?
The angel.
He's taunting the angel. He's taunting the angel. You know? I got everybody doing a meditation on nothing. They're not even the right side of town. They're in the streets and not in the avenues. You know? And he's bragging. Ignorance is bragging. I got everybody meditating on nothing. You know? First of all, I got everybody not meditating. And then the few who try to meditate, I got them meditating on nothing. Like, isn't that cool? Is that so cool? Yeah, he's bragging, you know? Okay. Which is true. Who knows where you might have gone when they were deep in those what? Those meditations. Okay? Who knows where you were when they were deep in my meditations? Goodness knows I've never seen you even a moment there. I've never seen you where? Where do they both live?
In
a human mind. They live in a human mind. And the devil is bragging, okay? They sit down to meditate, and suddenly, you ain't here anymore. I never see you here when they're meditating. Why? The angel is understanding where your husband really came from. Okay, remember that. It's not evil. It's not the person who made you, you know, eat another slice of pizza last night. It's not that. That's not evil. Evil is thinking your husband is coming from himself. That's evil. Okay? And when you sit and meditate and close your mind and think nothing is there, and you think this is meditation, then the angel cannot be there in the mind at the same time. He has to leave the mind. He has to leave the human mind. She. The angel is usually wisdom, which is feminine. Okay? That's okay, you can still have her name. He says, I've never seen you here during this meditation. You know, you just leave. Okay. Now, I have a question for you. If you answer it, you might get a break. This is always people like totally suddenly answer everything. Is it possible for the devil ever to see the angel? Can they coexist in a single mind at the same time?
No.
Yeah, not possible. Why? It's not possible to understand where your husband came from and in the same moment misunderstand where he came from. You either figured it out or you didn't figure it out. And if you figured it out, then not figuring it out has to leave. And if you didn't figure it out, the figuring out hasn't arrived. Got it? Okay, so it's kind of a tricky statement here. Of course they never meet each other. If you look at your husband and say, look, he's being critical. A real Buddhist, a real spiritual person, when the husband says, dinner sucks, they'll go like this. They won't go like this. They'll go like... You should try it. This is even more irritating to your husband. You're like... It's a big insult in our university if people, you say something to somebody and they go, where the hell did this come from? What did I do last week? How did I create this person? You know, it's the biggest insult. People don't. And you're like trying to talk to them and they're like, wait. Figure out where you came from. So when the husband, you know, if you're understanding them, you're like this. He says the dinner's stuck, and you go like... And then if you're not understanding him, you're like... You know? That means the devil's in your mind. And this means the angel's in your mind. With a little devil. That's a good one. Okay. Just an irritating thing. To say you will drive me from the mind is nothing but a joke, okay? In Tibetan, those of you that are learning Tibetan, Kemo name means laughing stock, or a subject of amusement. So, like a joke would be a Kemo name, or, you know, a TV comedy would be a Kemo name. So he says, you know, you say you're going to keep me out of my heart. It's a joke, man. You know, who's he saying that to?
The angel.
The devil saying the angel, you know. What, are you going to keep me out of mind? You're going to trade everybody in meditation? I'll just corrupt them anyway. You know, they'll start thinking about nothing and think that's meditation. Then they're even getting stronger in my belief, you know. It's cool. Try to teach them meditation. See if I care. Okay. All right. I still got 5 minutes before your break. Okay. Tibet Chenghi. Kyo gong ser, yata mata dudu dang, chepa mama chichini, gong la kimi, su su se. So those of you who know Tibetan, he's repeating the verbs, right? He's saying, what's he say? He says dup dup, and then he says che che, and then he says su su. And the last Tibetan word of the first line is what? Feel. Ser, okay? Ser is important. Ser means they said, he said. That's high tone. Ser is gold, low tone is he said. But it's critical. It means he claimed. Okay? He claimed. So ser is the Tibetan word for he says. He's meditating, he says. We roll our eyes, they lower the tone. You know, we go, he says, you know, it means he's not, right? He says, okay, he's meditating. What? Some people say they're meditating, and they droop, droop. Droop in Sanskrit is what?
Result?
No, in Sanskrit language, what is it? Droop. Who's doom-droop in Sanskrit? Siddhartha. Okay, so Dhruv means Siddha. Dhruv is the direct word for to accomplish. Siddhartha, the Buddha's name, Prince Buddha's name was Gets Things Done. That's Siddhartha. Siddha means to achieve. Artha means a goal. Or something you want to do. So Siddhartha. So people are, they siddha, meaning they try. They try. When you repeat a verb in Tibetan, it means the same as when you repeat it in English. Right? You try. You know? They try. Chepa Mambo Chechene. And they analyze, and they analyze, and they keep analyzing. Then, Gongna Kyuni Tsubsa said, and they just analyze other people's practice. They analyze other people's practice, right? This is a new meditation. You know, like, his meditation is no good. You are meditating on how bad someone else is meditating. Not analyzing them. You see? We have a practice in Buddhism, it's called Dobshi, right? What is that? Dobshi. The four powers. Mm. Which is how to remove an old bad karma from your mind that you created when you were 16 and you didn't know anything. Which we all have, right? I have. I grew up down the street. We raised some hell down there. Okay? So, you have to take out those seeds. The four powers are to take out seeds. So we're supposed to like keep a little journal and track our behavior during the day. And what we've noticed over the years is that people start to keep other people's journal for them. They're like, shouldn't you be writing what you said to me? He's talking about that. It's like, instead of meditating, they're like checking out everybody. It's like yoga class. It's like a yoga class. You want to know how many people at Tree Retreat are doing? This one guy, I saw them a couple of weeks ago, all of them. And this one guy sang me a song. He said, I wrote a song in Tree Retreat. You want to hear it? I said, yeah. He said, and I can't sing it, but it was like, my Shavasana is better than your Shavasana. My headstand's more straight. Now I can reach my toes and you can only reach your knees. And I even have a better yoga mat. it's true, right? You get the idea. I'm like, really sucking yoga. Look at the yoga now. We do that, right? So he's saying it about meditation. People are like, they're sitting in the meditation room. They're all supposed to have their eyes closed and they're like, look, his back's not straight. You can't be seen after this. Like that. Like, we worry about other people's yoga more than we worry about our own, right? Usually. That's what I do. Okay, I'm supposed to give you a break, but will I? Yeah, we better stop there because it gets a little complicated. So what we'll do, there's a bake sale tonight. We have bake sales at every single event that we've done in the last 6 or 7 years. And we estimate like $80,000 to $100,000. And we send 4 or 5 of our friends to a Tibetan monastery every year. So once a year they go for a month to my monastery, a Tibetan monastery, and they study for a month. And we pay their airfare, and we pay their food. And that all comes from overindulging in cookies. So it's patriotic. To stuff your face right now.
And they taste good. And
I don't know if they taste good. But overpay, okay? I mean, if you pay $20 or something for cooking, then somebody will be able to go next fall to study in the Tibetan monastery for a month. And if Sierra went this year, and Nick went this year, anybody else?
Katie
went, Adam went, and they'll shave your head for you. And not just kidding. But they did a great job. By the way, the lamas told me this was the best group in history. I think it's been 6 or 7 years, they said that was the best group. They worked the hardest and they learned the most. So please enjoy. Okay? Am I supposed to advertise anything else?
No. Casa Jardin.
Huh?
Casa Jardin.
Oh, you're always welcome to come here. There's a full program here during the week. It's all free. You can come and meditate with other people. You can do yoga together. There's a very fine yoga teacher here, a couple of good yoga teachers, Aaron and Nick. And they teach good meditation and they teach classes. They come back from the monastery and they export cool stuff. And then they teach it here for free. And we do it every day. We come every day. Every day somewhere we go out for yoga and we do meditation together. And it's just nice to have other people to meditate with. My first lama took a pencil in class and he broke it. And he said, "That's one person meditating by themselves." And then he took 12 pencils and he went, "And you can't break it." And he said, "That's 12 people meditating together." So talk to Nick. Talk to Aaron.
There's a sign-up sheet outside.
For why do you have to sign up?
Then you get an email.
Oh, okay. I would just come, but if you want to sign up. It's free. It's a nice place. It's good to meditate with other people. It's good to do yoga. You don't have to join anything. You don't get a secret name. You don't have to accept Geshe Michael as your supreme leader. We don't care. I don't care what you are. I don't care what you believe in. Come and do yoga together. Come and meditate together. It's just nice to be with other people who want to the same goals in their life. So, all right, have a nice break. I'll be here in case you wanted to stay higher. All right, next verse. 105. Well, we'll go for another half hour. Okay, we'll go to 9:30. I could go all night, but you wouldn't do it. Jokte dun na kintu dang gomba na yang chu chu pa che pa po yang chu pa che de yi che pa po yang chu. So this is another kind of meditation. It's called Shiraki number 10. Okay, say Shirak.
Shiraki
number 10.
Shiraki
number 10.
Shiraki number 10.
Shi means Shiva, peace. Rak means, so Shi means subtle. Rak means rough. Shirak means to go from rough to subtle in your meditation. So it means you get deeper and deeper, like you watch your breath, and the breath gets slower and slower, and you go more and more into it. They say it's like the difference between, I don't know, it happens to me when I listen to music, right? If I'm in the car or I'm in the grocery store, I'm not really listening, right? I know it's there. If you ask me afterwards, did they have music going in the grocery store, I say, yeah. And if you ask me what the song was, I don't know, you know? But then the music in my car, you know, I'm choosing the music, you know? And I like, you know, I'm listening to it pretty close, but I'm also trying to drive. And, but then sometimes you go home and you just lay down on the couch and you turn on your favorite piece. And then sometimes, you know, if you've had a really good day or something else, you hear things in the music. You hear the bass line, or you can hear the singer, subtle things about the music, you know, that you get deeper and deeper into the music, you see? And then you feel more and more peaceful, right? And that's called Shiraki Namache. That's called a temporary means to peace, okay? It's a temporary means to peace. It means you get more and more subtle. You can also do nada meditation. You can listen to sounds. Instead of complaining that there's cars outside Casa Jardin when you're meditating, you can listen for the cars. And that becomes a meditation, right? And you can think, oh look, that car needs a muffler, you know. Or that car, you know, that's probably a Mercedes, you know, like. And then you get into the sounds, you know, you pick out parts of the sounds. That's like a microscope going up and down, you see? That's like looking more detail, and then in the song also, right? It's like you screw the microscope down and then you screw the microscope back. And you're getting deeper or not in the meditation. That's a tool and not a goal, okay? That's important to understand. The devil wants you to spend your whole life Shiraki number 10. You know, deeper. Somebody slams the door. Somebody, you know, starts talking. Somebody starts cooking. And it's all just relative focus. But in our tradition, in the Dalai Lama tradition, it's what you're focusing on that's important. It's the content as opposed to form. So the form is important. You should be able to focus. And you should work on your focus. But don't get lost and forget what you're supposed to be focusing about. You see what I mean? Don't get lost on the microscope. Don't become a microscopist. You see what I mean? Don't get all into, oh, my microscope's better than your microscope. Right? It's just a tool. Meditation is just a tool. I like to compare meditation to the ability to read. Right? Like, people can go through their whole life without reading. If you don't know how to read, you miss so much in life. Reading is cool, because reading means you get to hear. Sorry. It's okay. He's coming from you. You get to read. The best things survive, mostly. You know, like you get to read Shakespeare or Tolstoy or Cervantes. Or you get to read the... If you can read, you get to meet the greatest minds of the last 2,000 years, you know? I'm not just talking... You also can't read. If you can't read, you might end up in a bicycle shop when you want to be in a donut shop. Because you can't read the signs. People who can't meditate are very similar to people who never learn to read. They are missing half the world. You see what I mean? They are missing half the cool stuff in the world. So it's like a sixth sense. It's like you can smell, you can hear, you can taste, and you can meditate. And then suddenly you're a bigger person, you see. Then suddenly everything is amazing. But it has to have content, you see. My lama used to turn on, he'd say, come up. He had a bell. He had a dog bell for me. He would ring his bell. I had to run upstairs, you know. He'd go ding, 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 ding. And I had to run upstairs and say, yes, lama, what do you need? And he'd say, sit down. He was really tough. He's this old Tibetan, ancient Tibetan monk. He said, sit down. Then he said, look at this. We're going to work on your meditation. I'm like, yeah? He says, okay, I got it on the television. Then he turned on his television. And he goes, we're not allowed to have a television. He's allowed to have a television. He's like, turn on the television. And then there'd be a baseball game. And I'm like, I thought you were going to talk about meditation. He said, yeah, you can watch. You know, and then there's this guy sitting up there, and then they do a close-up from the pitcher's point of view. I don't know how they do it. But the guy throws the ball like that, and the ball's in slow motion. It's going 90 miles an hour, and it's approaching the batter. And he grabbed my arm, and he'd say, watch the guy's face, watch the guy's face. And the batter would go, and he'd go. And then he'd hit a home run. You know, like his eyes would go. And then they interviewed the guy after the game, and they said, yeah, how come you always hit a home run? He says, the ball's like a watermelon. Who could miss it? You know? It's this big. You know? And he said, hit a watermelon with a stick? I mean, it doesn't take a genius. You know? But and my lama said, he knew the player. It was Daryl Strawberry, if you care. But he knew the player, and he said, this guy has meditation. This guy has focus. He has Shiraki number 10. He's got the ability to focus, right? But what's it focusing on? Baseballs. No, I mean, it's real meditation. And it's concentration. But it's not going to help his life. It's not going to say. In fact, he had a very sad life, right? He ended up as a drug addict and all this stuff, you know? So what he's saying here is one of the kinds of microscopes we are proposing in this poem. There are three or four. Okay, what are they? First of all, learn to listen to your mind thinking. Okay, that's lowest level Mahamudra, but we all need it to start. It's the first thing on, what do you call it, setting on the microscope. Learn to detect your own thoughts being taught in your head, and don't be in them. You see what I mean? Don't be thinking, be watching yourself thinking. That's different, right? Because then you can evaluate, am I thinking stupid stuff right now? See, you're not in the thought, you're watching yourself think. And try, okay? I'll tell you something about meditation. I've been meditating for over 40 years, okay? I'll tell you something about meditating. If you learn to listen to your mind talk, you have developed half of the skills of meditation that you will ever develop. Okay, that's half of all meditation. Learn to step back half an inch and watch the talking as if it's not you. Okay, as if it's not you. It's somebody else talking. And then half the job is finished. You save yourself 20 years. I'm not kidding. Learn that. Learn to listen to your mind, blah, 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 instead of being in the blah, blah, blah. See what I mean? And then, in our tradition, you would go through a meditation. Maybe we'll do it tomorrow morning, okay? If you have time. I don't know. What time is it going to happen?
Nine.
I hope not too early.
Nine.
at some place near here, right? I haven't been there.
Glendale Civic Center.
Glendale
Where
Civic
is it?
Center.
It's just around the corner.
It's in your booklet somewhere. Anyway, we'll go through, there's four steps of meditation we can do. One is we'll try to sit still and not move. And then we'll start watching the breath. And then we'll start watching the thoughts. And then we'll start trying to control them, which is like wrestling with an elephant, okay? But,
check.
Yeah. We'll do those four well, I'll teach you tomorrow, and that's a good practice you can do till May or whenever I see you again. May, I think we have something going on in May, but if you can do those four meditations, we'll do them tomorrow, we'll practice it tomorrow. But that's first level. The third one of those is first level, meaning I'm learning to watch my mind think, and it's depressing. Okay? It's like, I can't believe my mind just spent 45 minutes worrying about what we're going to have for breakfast. You know, like, that's all my mind achieved. You know, it was constantly talking for 45 minutes about how we're going to do the eggs and what we're going to put on the toast. And, you know, but at least to know how bad it is progress. Rather than being in the thoughts and not knowing how bad it is. And then you can start working on them, right? But first you got to learn to listen to. So that's step one, Mahamudra. That's the first adjustment in the microscope, okay? Then the second adjustment in the microscope is very cool. Where are those thoughts coming from? Okay? Those thoughts walked in the door and said stupid things. Sound familiar? Okay? Those thoughts walked in the door of your mind and said something stupid. It's just like your husband. Okay? Now, subtle. Get more subtle. Go more subtle. Are those thoughts just happening randomly? You know? Or are they related to how you were treating people last week? The stuff you hear in your mind and the stuff you hear from your husband is the same. Okay? What you hear being said in your mind was planted there last week. Okay? And you can't control it, and that's why people get addictions or they get angry or they get depressed, and you say, just be happy. And they're like, my lama, I said one day, it was so funny, this guy talked about his depression for half an hour. I used to help translate a little bit. And then he said, well, what do I do? And my lama looks at me and says, just be happy. And he said, okay, see you later. And then afterwards, I'm like, Lama, how can you do that to somebody? He's got serious depression and you tell him, just be happy. You know, he cannot be. Why can't you control your own mind? Why can't you tell your mind to be happy? Because it was planted last week. It's too late. It's like cement or it's like a tree that already, you can't push it. You can't say, I don't want to have sad thoughts today. You're going to have sad thoughts if you made someone sad last week. You don't have control over your thoughts. You know, the whole thing of, you can't meditate either. You can't control your mind. You can't tell your mind to concentrate. You know that. This whole meditation thing is a big scam. You can't tell your mind to concentrate. Don't think about French press. My first meditation teacher, he did Goenka. He invented Vipassana, right? He taught us. The Dalai Lama sent him to teach us. And he had a 10-day program. And the first thing he said, he got up and he said, I don't want, we're going to spend 10 days together meditating from dawn to midnight, and I don't want anyone to think about monkeys. So for 10 days, he like, all you can do is think about monkeys. Why do you tell us not to think about monkeys? And it was a big joke. You see, you can't control your mind. You cannot control your mind. You plant the mind for next week. You can plant the thoughts you want to hear next week. But today is too late. You're going to hear what they have to say. And you're going to hear what your husband has to say. And you can't stop it. That's why people can't not be depressed. Because it was planted last week. And it's too late. You can't stop. And addiction is the same. And anger is the same. Lust is the same. All of those things that you can't control yourself. It's what you planted last week.
That makes sense.
And then you're going to hear that in your mind. So now there's a different level of focus, right? Number one, think your thoughts. Number two, watch yourself thinking your thoughts. Number three, watch those thoughts coming out of karmic seeds from last week. Get so good in your mind, in your own head, that you can see them popping out of karmic seeds. And you can watch the process. It's very cool. You know, you're like looking at your mind. Oh, here comes a thought. I can feel it coming. I'm thinking, what are you going to have for breakfast? I knew you were going to say that. And you can get really good, you can get to where you can see the mind, you can see a karma opening in your mind and a thought popping out. See, so that's another distance, that's more distance from the mind, right? Originally you're stuck in your head and you're just listening all day to chatter. Then meditation means, Mahamudra means you step back a little bit and you watch your mind thinking, okay? Then step back more and watch those thoughts popping out of karmic seeds that you planted last week. And that's a deeper Mahamudra. Okay? The microscope came back a little bit. Okay. You want more? There's two more. There's two more, okay. When you get good at watching karmic seeds split open just before a thought comes into your mind, okay? Which means you caught what was really happening. Then what you're suddenly aware of is that it's not true that they're just happening on their own. It's not true that the thoughts in my own mind are random or unpredictable or uncontrollable. I can design my thoughts for next week. Isn't that cool? Like a lot of people come to me and say, I want to be more creative. You know, tell me the karma to be more creative. You can plant those seeds. And then you can invent some stuff, you know. Or you can play 5 instruments, you know, suddenly. You know, and just plant the seed. And then you can do anything. It's so cool. So the next step back is that these thoughts could have been different. And they are not uncontrollable. I can decide what I want to hear in my own mind next week. And I want to hear a happy, creative mind. And then you plant it. And the mind that was not controllable is the same as the husband who was criticizing it. Got it? Because it doesn't exist. Got it? The mind which cannot be molded into what you want it to be next week never existed. And the husband who decided to criticize your cooking from his own side that you got angry at was never there. And that's the next step back. It's emptiness, okay? But not, don't think black, okay? It means the husband I thought was there was never there. The guy I got angry at for 14 years was never there. All those wrinkles were unnecessary. And I paid for the mistake with those wrinkles. I put the wrinkles on my face with a guy who was never there. Because all the wrinkles on everyone's face come from people who are not there. They're all unnecessary. Okay? They're all a big, huge poo-poo. Okay? That's a Tibetan. So, you can... That's the next step back. It's emptiness. There was never a mind I couldn't make into what I wanted it to be. I didn't have to be the victim of my thoughts, my depressions, my desires, my sadnesses. You know, I could have had a beautiful, pure, clean, happy mind if I just knew how to plant it. Okay, got it? So what steps do we have now? Now, just anybody give me the first one. The normal state of people.
Being involved in the world.
Yeah, you're just here. You're in the chatter. What's the second one? You're able to step back and watch the chatter happen and not be involved with it, right? Oh, look, the mind is being stupid this morning. It's all worried about breakfast again. Okay, what's the next step back? Yeah, I can see it popping out of stuff I did last week. Why am I so caught up in breakfast? Oh, I was hassling somebody last week. You know, like that. You figure out the karma, right? Then what's the fourth step back? Yeah, it could have been different. The things I was all worried about were never there. A mind that couldn't have been created as Steve Jobs' mind. I wish he would be reborn fast. I could have had a mind like that, and I could still have a mind like that. There's no age thing. You can be any age, it doesn't matter. Once you learn how to plant seeds, you can have any mind you want. See? And the mind that I couldn't have didn't exist. Because there is no such thing. Whatever state of mind you want, you can have. There's no state of mind you can't have. And that's emptiness. Got it? If you want, I'll give you one more, okay? Two more. maybe we stop. There can be two additional states of mind in meditation that are watching all of those other ones. Okay? There can be. We got four so far. There can be two more watching the other ones. They are called quality checkers. Meditation quality checkers. They're called Shishin and Chenpa. Say Shishin.
Shishin.
Chenpa.
Chenpa.
They don't have English words because we don't meditate. So they have all these words like, they didn't have a word for carburetor in Tibet because they didn't have a car. My mama didn't even... No, you don't want to know. I thought when he was 70, I taught him to drive. Oh, yeah. He had never seen a bicycle. That was a trip. But just imagine that one day he's driving down the road. There's a guy out mowing his lawn. He's got three metal garbage cans lined up on the sidewalk. And my lala jumps the curb in the car and mows down all the garbage cans. And then he screeches to a halt and he jumps out. And he's like 70 years old and he's picking up all the garbage cans and saying, sorry, sorry, sorry. Then the guy goes, he did something. Then my mom says, what's that mean? I said, don't worry about it. Don't do it, but don't worry about it. So anyway, right? Oh yeah, Shishin. Shishin means the ability to quality check your meditation while you're meditating. Mm. Okay? The ability to quality check your meditation while you're meditating. And Shishin is watching out for the two classical errors or problems in the quality of focus on meditation. What are they?
Chingwa gupa.
Chingwa means you get sleepy. You didn't sleep enough, or you ate a pile of cookies during the break. And then you'll get dull in your meditation. Your meditation will get cloudy. The quality of the attention will be degraded. Okay? Now, when you're very tired, or right now, in fact. That's called chingwa. Gupa is what?
Restlessness.
Yeah, like the mind wants to jump from, they call in Tibet, they call it the fly on the poo. You know, it means the mind wants to jump around, you know? Did I check my email? Oh, I'm in meditation. I wonder if he's going to email me. Oh, I'm supposed to focus. Yeah, but what if he doesn't email me? You know, I mean, that's not good. So the fifth state of mind here is a quality control checker of the quality of the meditation. Is this mind sleepy? Or is this mind restless? And then it brings them, and then Chamba brings the mind back. Chamba, Shishin says, we have a problem, we have a problem. What's the problem? The mind is sleepy. Shishin doesn't correct it, it just reports. It's like a fire alarm. We have a problem. What? Meditation's not good. The focusing not good. What's wrong? He's too sleepy. Wake him up a little bit. That's Chamba. That's the other state of mind. Chamba corrects. Shishin detects. Okay. Shishin detects a problem, then Chamba corrects it. In the case of Chingwa, sleepiness, what would be a nice correction? Called Sengtupa. Sengtupa means think of something you like. It could be a girl in your school or something. Because the mind will suddenly brighten up. I'm not kidding. Okay? By the way, then you're supposed to come back to the meditation. And I'm not kidding. Think of something you really love. Something you really enjoy. You know? And it could be something you're going to do later today. Then you say, after I finish this dumb meditation, I'm going to skateboard for a while. Ah, that's cool. And then the mind gets refreshed. And that's the correction to illness. What's the correction for restlessness?
Think of death.
Bring it down. What's a good way to bring it down? Think of somebody you know who died. Frankly, the scriptures say that. Think of something you immediately know. If your mind is like, what's for breakfast? You know, am I going to get my email? My aunt died last week. And then the mind goes, and it comes to the focus. So these are the two tricks, okay? Shishin detects a problem, and Chamba brings the mind back by either one of those methods. If the mind's too sleepy, think of something you really like. You know, like a person that you really enjoy. And then if the mind is too restless, think of someone who died, and boom, it comes down. Okay? Got it? So we've got six states of mind now. What the text says, and we'll continue tomorrow, okay? We'll stop there. But what the text is going to say is stop with those and don't get into who's watching the Shishin, who's watching the Temba, who's watching the watcher of the Shishin, who's watching. That's enough. Leave it at that, okay? I'm watching my mind as it bees in its thoughts. Now I've learned to watch the thoughts go and not be involved with them. And now I've learned to understand that those thoughts are pumping out of things I did last week, and I'm watching that process. I've learned to watch that process. And then I've learned to understand that it was never any other way. And I could have been anybody this week. I could have controlled who I was this week if I had known. Okay? It's cool. Step number three is tracking what I did last week to create thoughts like this week. Like, what would be an example of, if you have breakfast thoughts, this is my main meditation obstacle. I haven't seen it in the scriptures, but I have it. It's breakfast thoughts. If I already have, you say, do you ever meditate after breakfast, Geshe Magha? I say, yeah, I do, but then I think about tomorrow's breakfast. then, see, what do you, What do you do then? You see, you watch how the thought about how the distractions are coming out of having interrupted people last week. The karma for having a mind distracted in meditation is interrupting other people, which I'm really good at. All right? Isn't that interesting? Like, the reason you're distracted in your meditation is that you wouldn't let other people talk last week. And they wanted to tell you about the headache they had, or, you know, the raise they got at work, and you were like, yeah, I also had a headache. You want to, you know, I mean, they're like, could I just talk about my headache for 2 minutes? I do this all the time. People tell me. Honest people tell me. So, that's all. So your own thoughts are coming from what you did last week. And watch that process. Learn to watch it and track it, because then you can change it. Okay? We have a tradition in Buddhism that we made a good karma tonight, because I don't think anyone else is having this conversation with Phoenix tonight. I'm guessing. So we made good karma. Unique, powerful karma has been created in this room tonight by the thoughts that we've talked about. These are holy, unusual, sacred things, and we make good karma. So what's the best way to protect that karma?
Give it away.
Give it away. Fast. Put it in the bank. The way to protect money or objects or anything, give them away. Quick. You get some money, give it away quick. I burned here. Oh, man. Last month, right? It was amazing, right? I didn't get paid for 6 months because we had an accounting problem in our company. And then they paid us 6 months in one day, and I'm like, what? You know? Well, I did that with us. Then I'm done, right? She's like all depressed. She does my finances. So we're going to put it in the bank now. We're going to give it away. You got a good karma? You got a good karma? Let's give it away. So there's this little mandala thing. If you know how to do it, do it. If you don't, you can just go like this with me. We'll do a song in Tibetan. The meaning of the song is, I give away my good karma tonight to everyone in Phoenix, that they can have a beautiful city, a perfect day. Okay, you ready? Who's going to do that? Mercy, you want to do it?
Sashi Jushin Meta Chan Rira Vinci Hinde Yampadi Sange Shindu Mikte Huagi Rokun Nanda Shimla Chupasho Yamuru Sunam yeshe lejove, dhamma kundi dhopashu.